Welcome to the Ecology and Research Channel. Green issues, ecology, incredibly important to embodiment. Obviously, we're embodied in place, we're embodied in a world. How we treat ourselves is how we treat the planet and vice versa. So this is super important, I think, for our whole planet. Research relates to this. We've sort of put two together there. We didn't quite know where to put research, so we put them in with ecology. This stage has lots of great speakers, people I personally enjoy, and it's sponsored by Forests Without Frontiers. So rather than sell a sponsorship for this channel, we decided, you know what, let's give it away to a green charity. Tree planting seemed a good one. We thought we can all get behind that. We all breathe air. We looked into a load, actually. Some of them are quite famous, but don't actually plant a lot of trees, weirdly, or other things that aren't so good with them. This one, Forests Without Frontiers, really does the work. They're in charge of a really big reforestation project in Central Europe, but, you know, we're all breathing it, thank you. It's run by Nicoletta, a very cool lady, and just a cool organization that really does the work. The money goes, you know, efficiently to actually planting trees. I'm happy to be supporting them. For me, it was like, you know, when we were looking at our charities to support, a green one just made a lot of sense to me. That just was obvious. Please do support them. Links below. As well as that, enjoy the whole channel. There's so much richness in this topic.
Brilliant. Okay, so I'm delighted to be welcoming Tyre today. Tyre is a somatic practitioner. She has a PhD in dance studies, and she's currently working as a resilience and mindfulness trainer. So she's bringing some of those skills and the things that she's learned, especially the PhD, to the presentation today. So without further ado, over to Tyre. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Adrian, and welcome everyone who joined this session. I'm happy to see you all here. I just had some delays in the prep for the session, so I don't know why exactly, because the internet is really fine, but if there are gaps in my speech or the image freezes or I fall out of the session, wait for me, I'll be back. And also let me know via the chat if anything happens, because sometimes me as a speaker, I just don't realize that I'm frozen for you guys. So hope it's all fine. Yeah, thank you for having me in this research channel, ecology and research channel. And also thank you for the introduction, Adrian. And I really would love to people to come into the session. So I think what you have to do is to raise your hand, not physically, of course, but via the little icon in the bottom. So then I would have some people I can actually speak to and see faces, and that would be awesome. So thank you for that if you do so. I see some people coming in. Great. Thank you so much. So yeah. The body is not natural. Hi, Julia. Great to see you. Hi, Simon. The body is not natural is the title of my session today. And I'm going to share my slides with you. Hope you can all see it and the connection holds up. So as the title implies, I would like to go about and ask with you guys together a little bit how natural our bodies actually are, and also how maybe the notion of naturalness can be problematic sometimes while doing body work, especially in the field of embodiment, where we work a lot with a somatic approach, with perception, and we come across a lot of ideas of naturalness. And yeah, I will tell you a little bit more about my background along the way, but just to start now, I would like to tell you a small anecdote that happened to me when I was in Morocco for the first time years ago, when I actually studied for my master thesis, which I wrote on dance and gender in southern rural Morocco. And of course, when visiting southern Morocco, I tried and really be conformed with this dress code there to not show too much skin and just be respectful. And I brought this shirt, like a kind of baggy shirt that covered pretty much all of my upper body, very thoroughly also, I thought. And then I walked down the street with this shirt on for the first time. And after just a few moments on the street, I realized how exposed I felt, because a tiny bit of my collarbone showed on the top area here. It wasn't anything like no low cut shirt or anything like that, but just this area was visible. And through observing the people on the street and through the gazes that I noticed, I realized that I felt really exposed and really naked in a way in that situation. And I'm pretty sure all of you can relate to experiences like that. We are from very different places. And also you're probably people who have traveled a lot in your life. So what I want to point to with this little story is that the way we feel our bodies to naturally just be a certain way, which parts, for example, are felt to be intimate or public, also which features make me maybe a woman or a man, these seemingly natural perceptions and feelings can change when the circumstances change, or when I come into a different country, or I'm in a different club or a different bar. So perception itself is not such a fixed thing as well. And this relativity of perception not only applies to our everyday experience or to experiences I have when I travel, but also to understandings that might come across very scientifically backed up, like, for example, anatomy. So anatomy is something, when we look at an image like this, where we see a body, this one focuses on the muscular structure of the body, we tend to feel that this is exactly what the body is like. This is a facts-based, scientific approach and depiction of the body, the way it is and the way it functions. And here as well, this is quite, you could also say it is a concept among many other possible concepts. For one, if you look, for example, at systems of anatomy that are a little different, like traditional Chinese medicine, the body is understood as made of these meridians and lines. So the focus already shifts a little bit from a classical Western view on the body. Or another example is, that's actually something a friend of mine told me when she did research in Mozambique. She did anthropological research on HIV and the spreading of HIV in Mozambique. And she found, when talking to a colleague, they shared the observation that the concept of body is actually not that of an individual body, the way we perceive it, but that the body is made up of two bodies that are always in relation to each other, and they need an energetic circulation between each other to stay healthy. And then in that particular context, you can imagine how tricky it was for people from Western countries coming there and trying to prevent HIV, because the concept also included that the use of a condom interrupts this energy flow and therefore is not healthy for the body anymore. So with these examples, I just want to make you sensitive to this fact that anatomy is not a universal given. The way we look at the body is not entirely fixed. I don't want to say it's random, of course, but there are always different discourses coming along with these concepts of anatomy. And I'd like to speak today about two main aspects in this presentation. First, I will talk a little bit for a few minutes, and then we'll have a little bit of space also for you to dive into your own experience. I'll explain then what that will be like. And then we will also have some time in the end to so you can share some insights or ask some questions via the chat function or maybe even in person. So the two aspects that I want to focus on today is the question that I already brought up in the beginning. What if the body is not as natural as we sometimes think? And what if we maybe understand the body as shaped by discourse, by assumptions, by interests, and by regular practices? And those of you who are maybe familiar with a constructivist theory will recognize this. This is the idea that the body is not a biological given, but that rather it is formed and reformed by the performative act of stating things, of practicing things. This is a bit abstract maybe, but to bring it more to a concrete example, this is a big part of gender theory and queer theory as well now. There are people who postulate that gender, that male, female bodies are just biologically there. And then there are people who say, no, we can't put it in that such an easy way. We have to really see that gender is constructed over time and through practices. And I brought a picture with me because I think sometimes visuals are more, can transport more than words can. About this gender thing, I picked a picture of two kids because studies show that girls and boys from a very early age are shaped by their surrounding and by the responses they get from their caregivers in their role. And of course, also in their embodiment. And on this picture, you see, this is quite a typical image, I think, of a female and male embodiment, the girl kind of cutishly tilting her head, smiling and closing the front, and the boy rather standing in a bold, straight manner. So if you're interested to learn more about that, if you're not familiar with it anyway, there are the baby X studies. There has been a lot of research done on this really early gendered interaction with babies. So that would be an example of how bodies are created in a certain way through cultural tropes and through repeated practices and interactions. And the second aspect of today, of course, because we are here at the Embodiment Conference, is to how in the field of embodiment and somatics, we often refer to a natural body, be it explicit by using, for example, anatomy, or certain givens that we use in our body work, in our body coaching, whatever we do, is a whole range of techniques, of course. But also sometimes implicit. So just by phrasing exercises in a certain way, by terminologies we use, by feedbacks we give. And my argument is that that can be problematic because this can exclude a political perspective on the body. And the body is quite a political thing if we think about it. So why can that be problematic? When we look at history, for example, we find a lot of things that used to be considered natural and that are no longer perceived to be natural at all. So if you think about the role of men and women 50 or 100 years ago, you will probably no longer think that this was a natural situation. And I have one image with me of a family dinner. It's from around the 50s, where a happy family dinner situation is depicted. I think none of us would you choose an image like this as a happy family dinner anymore, and none of us would probably think of the really strong roles that are visible in this picture of a man sitting at the table waiting for his wife probably to serve the food and the woman supplying. We wouldn't think of this as a natural role model anymore. And it's actually not so long ago. Another quite drastic example is that of colonialism. In this picture, you see a British functionary in colonial India getting a pedicure by an Indian person. And both examples show inequality that was grounded in the assumption of different bodily features that led to exclusion, to hierarchy. I hope you can still hear me. I think there was a little gap. Okay, so I get a nod.
We're good. Thanks, Taya.
Okay, great. And I think we're all same opinion that these isms, this sexism that we just saw on these photos, racism, colonialism, are of course problematic. And it has a relation to the field of embodiment, not in the way that we want to promote these isms in our field, of course, but we are not entirely free of them either, because they shape the world we live in and they shape the way we view our bodies, be it in an embodiment practice or outside of that. And to illustrate this a bit further, I'd like to give you an example by a scholar. His name is Doran George, and he wrote a PhD on body concepts in the field of somatics. George attended the EDDC, it's the European Dance Development Center in Arnhem in the 90s, quite a progressive dance school at the time that was well known for using somatic approaches as an integral part of the curriculum of professional dance education. So one of the first ones who did that. And George describes beautifully the appreciation of this progressive and often very leftist agenda of the school and of the taught movements and approach to movements, because he found that they didn't emphasize gender difference so much, being respectful towards the body and its uniqueness, supporting individual creativity, not being so much involved in a paradigm of effort and strain as in other dance schools, but you know, a bit more casual and just different. But he also found, and I will quote now because I couldn't really put it any better, and I put the quote on the slide as well. It's a long quote, so bear with me. George says, "My education also instituted some conservative ideas. The training largely excluded non-Western aesthetics and configured transgender expression as artificial. My movement seemed not to be so. When I was told my voice was unnaturally high and was encouraged to work with male teachers to connect with my masculinity, I believed my femininity resulted from my bodily nature somehow having been thwarted." Southern European and non-Western students faced similar problems, being from cultures that are represented as especially passionate, sexual, and mystical in Anglo, Germanic, and Nordic contexts. Like me, these students found that the school's dominant aesthetics marked them as non-neutral. All in all, despite its progressive intentions, EDDC stratified bodies as being more or less authentically connected with nature. And although I and others questioned the premise of neutrality, it was difficult to challenge because it was bolstered by generally accepted scientific metaphors. So this is a first-hand experience of someone who moved in the roughly in the context of somatic techniques, of embodiment techniques, and really experienced things that were personally confusing, of course, but also they are quite political, because a male-female dichotomy was opened up that was closely related to naturalness. And then George started researching and questioning this notion of naturalness. So what do we do when we want to question a concept? It always makes sense, and it's also good scientific practice to look at the moment of the emergence of this particular concept. And George did that in relation to naturalness in the field of somatic and embodiment techniques. Because if naturalness is not a given, surely it is influenced by the political and cultural circumstances at the time of its emergence. Naturalness in dance and movement practices has also changed over the centuries. One example for that would be this. I'll just quickly check the chat that I don't have any. Okay, so there is some delay. Okay. I'm sorry about that. Is it fine now? You give me a thumbs up if you're good now. Okay.
It's so okay. It's going in and out. It's
fine for the last days of the conference, and now I don't know why. Okay. So on the left, you see Isadora Duncan, one of the protagonists of the modern dance movement in the beginning of the 20th century. And she related her movement vocabulary as related to her vocabulary as natural as well. And she called it natural mostly in opposition to the very codified movement vocabulary of ballet that was quite well known at the time. It still is, of course, but then as well. And she also got inspired for her movement by nature. She used wind and leaves as an inspiration, and also ancient Greek mythology. And she founded her repertoire on the assumption that the natural movement of the body is actually distorted by ballet, and we have to have a different way of expressing. From today's perspective, I think few of us would call her, the posture you see on this image, a very natural one. It might seem a little dramatic or theatrical, and she uses quite some tension. So it's not, in this moment, not so much linked to naturalness anymore. It's also become, modern dance, of course, has become part of a very codified movement practice as well. It's a dance technique that a lot of people learn. But at the time of her creation, it was considered natural by the people appreciating her work. And on the right side, you see a very different movement technique, contact improvisation. I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with this technique because it's practiced a lot in our circle, embodiment circle as well. And it's a technique that emerged in the field, roughly in the field of postmodern dance in the 70s and 80s, and brought with it a new aesthetic, a new use of gravity derived from Eastern martial arts practices. And it turned away from expressiveness and supported the body in its natural makeup. Again, this was a notion of neutrality or naturalness that positioned itself in opposition to the codified and strict repertoire of modern dance training, of ballet, and also in opposition to the formal settings of concert dance. So performances were kind of casual, used also as political interventions, and not on stage, you know, in an institutionalized context. So this concept of naturalness, not altering the body, using the force of gravity, deciding in the moment on the next move, might be a little closer to us here today. We might relate to this notion maybe more, but it also emerged in a certain historical and political moment, same as modern dance did or ballet did. So somatic techniques as an approach and embodiment techniques focus on perception, on anatomy, and uses movement, not along a certain body of steps, just like I just talked about with the contact improvisation example, but rather lets movements emerge spontaneously or lets forms alter a little bit, relating to the individual setup of a body. And like I said, Doran George went and looked at the origins of such approaches, which actually date back to the beginning of the last century and then became very popular in urban contexts of the USA in the 70s and 80s, namely New York. And they were part, same as contact improvisation and linked to it, of the movement of postmodern dance. And from there, while at first being a quite a political, progressive, rebellious practice, they were slowly canonized and institutionalized into dance education and into institutions of dance education, and then also moved to Western Europe to places like EDDC, for example. So somatic techniques and embodiment techniques are techniques that were developed and spread in a very Western and mostly white context that even though could be called a leftist, progressive, feminist field, still holds the dichotomy of gender quite dearly, like we saw in the example of the EDDC experience of Doran George. And it often highlights the presence of white and Western bodies, not by wanting to highlight this presence, not by consciously excluding, but just by the field it emerged from and it was practiced in. And George even goes as far in his conclusion as to postulate that the freedom of movement choice in somatic techniques and the focus on individual perception and creativity is deeply embedded in the capitalist and individualist discourse of the USA in the 70s and 80s. And even though it rebelled against conservative ideas, which it definitely did, it promoted neoliberal ones that take a Western and a white body as a reference point. So pretty full on if you say it that way, I think. Yeah, I'm keen to hear what you guys are about to say to this as well, but I think he definitely has a point here. And before I continue with some more practical, exercise, I'd like to add a second layer of problematicness, if you can say that, to the idea of the naturalness of the body. Because even though, like I just explained, in the field of somatics and embodiment, we refer to a body that is quite neutral, kind of scientifically fact-based and anatomical, there are also often references made to kind of a universal human nature. And I think this being quite an inclusive concept at first sight and surely important in a lot of contexts, you can also link it to a tradition which places the body, the natural body, in opposition to reason, to a more rational paradigm, which in turn has been historically conceptualized as Western, male, opposed to female, a bit chaotic, non-Western, to put it really simply. But this binary system has been with us for quite some centuries now. Just to give you an idea, I picked some random terms from the conference program. And I think it's not a problem to use them. I just want to be clear on that. But if you put them in context and collect them, I think you know where I want to go. For example, I have the terms archetypes, natural, nature, instincts, anatomy, ancient, embodied wisdom, natural breath, embracing wildness, deep intelligence, authentic. And this all relates to this kind of universal, natural notion. And if we place the body in this dichotomy between body and reason, Western and non-Western, male and female, and we place it on the side of this naturalness, this femininity trope. Again, this has been and still is quite related to processes like othering, racism, sexism, and the like. So I think on this level too, we need to be alert of what we use and how we use it. So to cut a long story short and to also bring it back a little bit more to our ongoing embodiment conference, I just want to make clear that I think the way we sense our bodies, the way we maybe find a center in our lower belly, the way we use gravity in our body work, the way we maybe lift our leg from the psoas, or the way we breathe and move, might often feel natural, but sometimes it's not. Or rather, it's always worth questioning this naturalness. Because our daily movement or meditation practice, our teaching, the wording of the exercises we guide our students through are full of ideas of naturalness, and they are also full of political heritage. So when we look closely at the origin of our personal concepts on naturalness, we might just find not maybe a human universal neutral source, but actually a political situation that needs to be considered as well. And therefore we can understand our field of embodiment as a political field that also needs to be considered as such. So the conclusion of this presentation would be that when we talk about naturalness, we enter a kind of a battlefield of politics, of colonialism, of sexism, racism, and also ableism. Because when we hold a fixed idea of naturalness and of the natural body, the body is always defined as normal and as natural in a certain way, in a certain manner. So, an argument that often comes up when I talk about things like this is the question about where nature ends and where nurture starts. So how could we claim that everything is shaped by discourse and by practice? When we look at our bodies aging, being sick, giving birth, all these things that we experience. And of course, I cannot offer a solution to this question. I just think it's always worth turning around the lens and looking at the concept and where it points to and where it comes from and what it might unravel or what might become visible when I look at it thoroughly. And also, don't get me wrong, because I'm a body worker myself. I love working with the perception of the body. I love exploring spontaneous movement. I'm convinced by its power to regulate the body and to help us find our unique movement vocabulary. I'm not against any of that. I'm just proposing that we also have to get political in our embodiment practice and not just take the body's naturalness for granted. Rather, it makes sense to be aware of these notions on naturalness and then find out where they come from and to which discourses they are related. Okay, this is the theoretical part. A lot of information. I hope you stayed with me and I hope the connection was fine. I'd like to, I will have some time for comments and questions. I'd like to take you on a little exploration into your own bodies, actually. And for that, if you wish, you can stand up for a moment because you probably concentrated a lot, heard a lot. You can also stay seated if you wish, but if you can stand up and just shake out your body for a moment. Let the breath come and go. Shake out your hands. Let the jaw loosen. Shake out the right foot a little bit, the whole leg standing on the left, and then shaking out the left foot and leg standing on the right. And then rub your hands together so heat is created. And without much effort, come back to your chair, to a seated position. And place your hands on the tabletop or on your thighs as you wish. You can choose. Put them on a surface though, and close your eyes here for a moment. And sense the palms of your hands touching a surface. Feel maybe the temperature of the hands, the fingers, the back of the hands. And now be aware of maybe concepts bubbling up around your hands while you hold your perception rooted in your hands. Be aware of maybe if you have a visual, an image of your hands, even though your eyes are closed, maybe you kind of see the shape of them before you. Maybe there are thoughts on what your hands do every day. Maybe no concepts bubble up just now, but it's still a valid practice as it kind of trains this way of looking at the parts of our bodies. And then for a moment, take your hands and place them on your lower belly. Keep your eyes shut. And tune into this area of your lower belly. The front of the belly, the back of the belly. And here again, give some space for images, ideas, words to bubble up if they want to. Maybe if your background is in martial arts, you might think of this area as the center of your body. You might have terms like Hara or Dantian in your mind. Maybe you're busy with what your belly is supposed to look like. Beauty ideals being present. Maybe you think of it more as a center of sexuality, or you think of a chakra, or whatever it is. So many options. Just give some space for your personal concepts to show up if they want to, and if you want them to. Okay, and then you can take a deep breath and slowly come to your attention back to the screen. Place your hands back wherever you want to place them. Open your eyes. And I'd like to open the space now for questions, but also I have some questions here already. But before I read them, I'd be interested also to hear if through the presentation you might have come across some, or this exercise we just did, you might have encountered some areas where you notice your personal notion of naturalness coming up regarding something in your work, in your practice, in your body. And if there is anything that you would like to share about that, something where you think, I should have a look at that someday, or, you know, that makes me kind of wonder if I should use words differently, or just examples from you. I'd be happy to hear them if you have any insights that you'd like to share. And apart from that, I will look at the Q&A now. So Cheryl asks, this is a good example of the difference between the map and the territory. Have you done work related to functional anatomy or experiential anatomy work? Well, it's a nice analogy, the map and the territory. And I use experiential anatomy as well in my body work. Yes, I do, because I love it. And I've always been fascinated by it. It's definitely something where I'm also aware of maybe offering it in a way that is not sold as the truth or sold as facts, but rather as an option to think about things and experience certain things. How are beauty standards formed is another question. How do nature and politics affect them? Well, do we have all evening? It's a big question. Good question. Well, and definitely not something I can just answer in a few sentences, because beauty standards definitely are so culturally shaped. When we look cross-culturally, for example, they can really differ. And it's just, you know, also a field of strong interests, and where things like gender roles play a very important role, because women feel more obliged to these beauty standards. And I mean, I think there's just so many layers. And with your question, how do nature and politics affect them? That's a little bit the question again about what is nature and what is nurture, you know, where to draw the line between, is there a natural beauty concept or something like that? And I think this is not so important, not the important aspect of the question now, but rather to look at, okay, what is maybe the beauty standard that I hold in myself, and how is it influenced and shaped? With whom do I share it, and why has it become so dominant and strong? Okay. People can also, are welcome to speak also. I'm also happy to listen to you. Mary Lawrence says, yes, I perform developmental technique based on movement in utero and early life. Interesting. Babies that were not placed on the floor tend to not develop the ability to leap or jump. Babies raised in lots of vertical architecture climb up furniture to get what they want. Babies where there is no furniture crawl on the horizontal plane and develop differently. Beautiful presentation. Thank you. Yeah, that's another example of how the circumference in a very early age shapes the way the body functions in the world. Thank you for that sharing. Megan, oh God, so many questions. Are you saying there's nothing neutral about the body or nothing natural about our understanding of the body? Is there a way to access the body as it is apart from our cultural gendered understanding of the body? Is there an objective body? Very important, very big question. So with the presentation here today, I really want to just change the focus without saying there is no natural body. I'm not the person to decide about that, you know? But I think it's incredibly important to change the focus, to not go and search for what is natural, exactly what can I hold on to as a natural essence, but to rather also look at the aspects that are constructed and political. So I can't really answer the question. I just can say that I think it's very important to look at the at these political aspects too. Also, and as a physical example to support your thesis in mask work, the neutral mask is based on a life form from the Western Europe face shape. Yeah, I have a lot of examples on that. How the Western white male often ideal is placed as a reference point for things. Thank you for that. Okay, there's another question. What do you think of people who choose to be naturist? Are they more natural? I'm not sure what a naturist is, actually. Can't really say that. Sorry.
People, does the question mean people who are being naked in nature? Just is that the question they're asking?
Well, if it's about nakedness, no, I don't think that makes the body automatically more natural, because it's still shaped by all these discourses that I just pointed to. But I'm not sure if this is what was meant, so. Okay, there's one, there's other questions in the chat. Isn't there also a political aspect of the natural that sets it against the existing status quo in a revolutionary challenge? Of, definitely. And I think the example I gave about postmodern dance, which is where our field of embodiment techniques also kind of derives from, is such an example, how the body was perceived as a very neutral, natural entity. And actually in the dance context, gender difference, for example, was not emphasized, you know, women lifting men lifting women wasn't so codified what male and female bodies could do. And at the time, of course, that was quite revolutionary. And then also the performance setting changing from theaters to just old churches and, you know, venues that were really informal. They were very progressive, and it was basically a form of political activism as well as art. This is where the whole performance culture comes from as well. So I think there's definitely a possible way to look at it. It's with these examples, I always feel like there's so many layers to it, you know, because I don't want to say that any search for a more natural way of moving or living is a bad one. But we also have to keep this political layer in mind as well. And I feel like this tends to get forgotten sometimes in the field of body work. That's why I'm bringing this here today. Okay. Amy says, I feel that the naturalness of the body, of my body, to me is simply about what is in the moment, at which I am experiencing in my energetic field and physical sensation. Having said that, I appreciate the lens of seeing what can commonly be assumed as naturalness in terms of embodiment. And I agree that there are a lot of mostly unconscious biased assumptions at play when we consider the body. This is a very welcome conversation in the field. Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much. This is pretty much exactly what I feel, that what I tried to say before as well, that with my love for body work and especially the perception of the body and all the good that comes with it, also meditation, of course, I feel really connected to that. But it's all about applying this different lens on the situation as well, this political lens.
Great. But that's probably quite a good point to come to a close. Yeah. I think that's a really nice way to end. Before we finish, Taya, I wonder if you could, have you got a top tip from what your research and learning of how we can stay more embodied?
Well, I don't know. I could maybe say feel the body, but think as well. Being aware that I create a dichotomy here, but I'll leave it at that for now.
Okay, thank you. So that was really very welcome and an enjoyable new perspective for us all. I think that was brought a very valuable, almost like we're turning in on ourselves a little bit and going, so what is this embodiment thing all about? Mm-hmm. So really a crucial, actually, frame for us all about what we're doing. So if you'd like to own this session and all the others, all the amazing stuff that we've got to have for the rest of your lives, you can buy the package. So just click on the upgrade button at the top of the screen. So the next session coming up, it's going to be Dr. Aimer Ray, who's going to be talking about embodiology. She's going to be on, it's UK 8 o'clock, but if you check in the schedule, you'll see that coming up. This has been on Facebook, so you can go there and continue this discussion. And there's some links coming up in the chat box. We've got a coffee room. You can go and hang out and talk to each other. And lots of opportunities to continue this conversation, because this very much feels like this is just the beginning of a much bigger conversation.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Adrian, for that conclusion. And if you feel like it, anyone, feel free to reach out. I'm happy to exchange. I think my Instagram details and Facebook details were just posted in the chat, and my website as well. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to more conversation around this topic. Thank you. Thank you for joining today.